Akhotra Foundation presents the Akhotra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akhotra AI. So what if life, and you know, business too, could genuinely be one big exciting adventure? Like, imagine building this huge global thing, not by losing your soul or your sense of fun, but actually by using them. That's kind of what we're diving into today. We're looking at the incredible world of Sir Richard Branson, and we're using his own words, his autobiography, Losing My Virginity, as our guide. Now, Branson, he's more than just a businessman, right? He's a British tycoon, investor, writer, philanthropist, founder of the Virgin Group, and that's like over 400 companies now. But the really fascinating part, his journey, he was a school dropout, dyslexic, and he just completely rewrote the rule book on entrepreneurship. So our mission here for you listening is to really pull out the core thinking that drove him, understand how we flip those apparent weaknesses into strengths, and find the practical takeaways from a life lived honestly right on the edge.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, that's why this book, this story, feels so relevant right now. The main idea isn't just, here's what I did. It's more like a Maverick's handbook for seeing life and business as this one big adventure. It's all about challenging how things are usually done, taking risks, smart risks, we should say, and making sure you're having fun along the way. And what's really powerful, I think, is how his story shows you don't have to be ruthless or super corporate to build something massive. Instead, it's about passion, really respecting people, and yeah, that famous screw it, let's do it approach. It's almost like a model for authentic leadership today.
Absolutely. That screw it, let's do it thing. Uh-huh. It had to come from somewhere, right? So let's maybe go back to the beginning, those early years. He grew up in Surrey, England, and his dyslexia was a huge factor. He's talked a lot about how school was just a nightmare for him, struggling with reading, with numbers, feeling like he didn't fit in. But instead of it just being a downside, that struggle kind of became his first big lesson in resilience, didn't it? It forced him to figure out totally different ways to learn and think. And you can't really talk about his childhood without mentioning his mother, Eve Branson. She sounds like quite a character.
Oh, definitely. Very unconventional. Mm-hmm. Really focused on making him independent, self-reliant. You know, the famous story of her dropping him miles from home and saying, find your way back.
Wow. That certainly builds character, I suppose.
It definitely seems to have instilled a certain fearlessness. And that, combined with how his dyslexia made him process things differently, well, that really did become a kind of superpower in business later on. Think about it. Before computers made everything visual, if written stuff was hard for you, you had to get good at talking to people, right? At boiling down complicated ideas into something simple and persuasive. So it wasn't just people skills. It forced him to become a great communicator, a storyteller, someone who had to delegate because he couldn't pore over every detail himself. He had to trust people, simplify, focus on the big picture.
Those are huge business skills.
Huge. And it also gave him this real empathy for, you know, the underdog, which became kind of central to the whole Virgin brand later.
That's a really interesting connection. And speaking of the brand, the name Virgin, it captures that early spirit perfectly, doesn't it? Where did that come from?
Yeah, it's a great story. Apparently, a colleague suggested it simply because they were all total beginners in business, complete virgins. Mm-hmm. And that kind of self-deprecating honesty, even if it was accidental at first, became a sort of brand trademark. It signaled they were outsiders, fresh, not afraid to shake things up. It was quite clever, really. Anti-establishment without even maybe trying too hard at the start.
So this rebellious spirit, this frustration with school, that leads to his first real venture, Student Magazine, right? At 16.
Yeah, 16. Hmm. And you're right. It wasn't just some kid's school paper. It was ambitious. A national magazine aiming at youth culture, tackling big issues like the Vietnam War, student rights.
Didn't he interview Mick Jagger for it?
He did. Mick Jagger, other big names. So what did Student teach him? Basically everything school didn't. Yeah. Fundraising, marketing, how to persuade people, the power of media.
Yeah.
A real crash course. But it also gave him his first brush with the less glamorous side of business.
Yeah.
The mail order record business that grew out of the magazine, which then became the first Virgin record store.
Yeah.
Well, that hit a major snag early on.
Oh, what happened there?
He got caught trying to avoid purchase tax on records meant for export. Ended up spending a night in jail.
Wow, a night in jail. That must have been terrifying for a young guy starting out.
Yeah, he says it was exactly that, a terrifying wake-up call. But it apparently hammered home the need to do business ethically, transparently.
Yeah.
It wasn't just a mistake. It was a hard lesson about responsibility, integrity, and, you know, not cutting corners.
Yeah.
Probably made him a much more careful businessman in the long run.
That makes sense. Learning from failure, not letting it sink you. So, okay, he's got these early lessons. The record stores are doing okay. What was the next big move, the one that really kicked off the music side of things?
Right. So he takes the profits and buys this old country house, converts it into a recording studio called The Manor. Very ambitious. And his first big bet there was on this unknown musician, Mike Oldfield. His album, Tubular Bells, had been turned down by like every single major label.
Everyone said no.
Everyone. Branson released it on his brand new label, Virgin Records, and bam, Tubular Bells becomes this massive global phenomenon. Sold millions.
Wow.
Yeah. That wasn't just a hit record. It was the financial foundation for pretty much everything that came next. And it proved Branson had an ear for talent and wasn't afraid to back something completely different.
And it wasn't just Oldfield. Soon after came the Sex Pistols, signing them when nobody else dared. That really cemented Virgin's image, didn't it? As the rebels.
Oh, absolutely. That was a masterstroke, really.
Right.
Part business savvy, part probably just Branson being Branson. He saw the cultural moment, the energy, the controversy surrounding the Pistols. He realized that notoriety itself could be powerful marketing. It screamed anti-establishment. It perfectly amplified the Virgin brand as the place for outsiders, the label that wasn't afraid. Bigger, more corporate labels just couldn't touch that.
That same kind of challenger spirit then led him into airlines in 1984, Virgin Atlantic. And again, not some big strategic plan, was it? More like an impulse.
Pretty much. The story goes, his flight to Puerto Rico got canceled. He got frustrated, chartered a plane himself, and thought, hey, I could do this better. He wanted to offer something different from British Airways, which was seen as kind of stuffy and complacent, more customer-focused, more fun. And Virgin Atlantic took off, partly because it delivered on that better service, little perks, treating people well.
But that success really annoyed the big guys, specifically British Airways, led to that infamous Dirty Tricks campaign. Sounds pretty intense.
It was incredibly intense.
Yeah.
BA was later found to have run this campaign. Allegations of hacking Virgin's computers, trying to poach passengers, spreading nasty rumors. It was brutal.
Like corporate warfare.
Exactly. It pushed Branson right to the edge. And this is where a really tough decision came in. He ended up selling Virgin Records, his first love, to EMI.
He sold the record label.
Yeah, for $1 billion. He needed the money to keep the airline alive during that fight with BA. Must have been absolutely heartbreaking.
$1 billion. Wow. But he ultimately won against BA, right?
He did. He won a major libel case against them. It was a huge victory, not just financially, but for the brand's reputation. It cemented Virgin as the underdog that fought back, the champion for the customer against the big corporation. When you think about that whole battle, it really shows incredible resilience, doesn't it? Sticking to your guns, fighting for what's right, even when you're up against a giant. It shows how a smaller player can win if they have a strong identity and fight smart.
Yeah, that's a powerful story. And it really highlights how personal these ventures were for him, which brings us back to his core philosophy, this idea of work-life integration, not balance.
Right. He doesn't see work and life as separate boxes. For him, business is part of the adventure of life. It's driven by passion, by wanting to fix things that annoy him, like that canceled flight, or just by having fun.
So it's not just a job, it's living.
Pretty much. Yeah. That enthusiasm, you feel it permeates the Virgin culture he tried to build.
Yeah.
Find the joy in the challenge itself.
Okay, but what about the risk? Screw it, let's do it. Sounds great. But he's often seen as this huge risk taker. Yet he talks about protecting the downside. What does that actually mean in practice? How is it different from just being reckless?
That's such a key point. Protecting the downside is like his golden rule. Before launching something big, he figures out, if this completely fails, will it bankrupt the whole group? If the answer is yes, he finds a way to limit the potential damage. Like with Virgin Atlantic, apparently he negotiated to lease the first planes instead of buying them outright. So if the airline tanked early on, they could just give the planes back without being stuck with huge debt.
Ah, okay. So it's not no risk, it's managed risk.
Exactly. It's having an escape hatch. Understanding the worst case scenario before you jump. Virgin Cola, for example, didn't really work out as a global brand, but it didn't sink the company. It was a lesson learned, but the downside was contained.
So that screw it, let's do it motto, it's more about overcoming the fear to act after you've done that risk assessment, not just jumping in blind.
Precisely. It's a bias for action, yes, but not reckless action. It's about not getting bogged down in endless analysis once you've figured out you can survive if it goes wrong. The folly is skipping that can we survive this step.
That makes a lot more sense. And his leadership style fits into this too, right? That people first idea.
Totally.
Yeah.
His philosophy there is pretty straightforward. Look after your staff and they'll look after your customers. He genuinely seems to believe in empowering people, especially those on the front lines. Less hierarchy, more trust, making work environments fun and stimulating. You hear stories about him calling customers himself to sort out problems. It shows that hands-on, everyone matters kind of approach. Building a culture where people feel like they belong, not just like they have a job.
And it's impossible to separate the Virgin brand from Branson himself, isn't it? All those stunts, the balloon attempts, dressing up, they weren't just for fun.
Well, probably fun for him, but also brilliant marketing. Completely organic. He became the brand. Adventurous, a bit cheeky, unconventional, way more effective, and probably cheaper than standard advertising. He's embodied Virgin. And again, maybe that dyslexia helped here too. Forced simplicity, big picture thinking, delegation. But maybe it also made him seem more human, more relatable. That personality translates into the brand feeling approachable. Even buying Necker Island, yeah, it's a luxury escape, but he always framed it around family, mm-hmm. keeping grounded. It adds to that human element behind the huge success.
Okay, so let's bring this all together. After diving into his story, what are the big takeaways for you listening right now if you're dreaming of starting something? Well, Branson's story is kind of the ultimate cure for analysis paralysis, isn't it? You don't necessarily need the fancy degree or the perfect plan. You need passion, serious grit, and just being willing to learn as you go. He really showed how smart, creative PR can beat big ad budgets. And if you're already leading a team or a company, his people-first approach is a solid blueprint. Flatten things out, really listen to the people doing the actual work, give them power, and yeah, try to make work enjoyable part of life.
And it goes beyond just business, I think, that screw it, let's do it idea. It's about living more adventurously in general, right? Facing fears, trying new things, seeing failure as just data, a lesson learned. And why does this matter now? Well, people are pretty skeptical about big corporations and leaders sometimes. Branson offers a different model, maybe not perfect, but focused on purpose, on empowering people, on the customer. He was kind of ahead of the curve on things like CSR and employee experience. It shows that thinking long-term, being authentic, building something based on passion, that can actually create something really lasting and impactful. What's so striking is that he succeeded not by fitting in, but by being himself, by breaking rules, by having fun, and kind of refusing to believe things were impossible. Which does make you think.
It really does. Maybe the biggest lesson from losing my virginity is just that. The rules are often there to be challenged. Success doesn't always mean following the map someone else drew. Maybe it's about drawing your own, fueled by passion, fun, and yeah, a bit of healthy disrespect for impossible. So what does that actually mean for you?
Well, Richard Branson's whole life is kind of a dare, isn't it? A dare to rethink what success even looks like. Are you letting things you think are limitations, maybe like his dyslexia initially, or just conventional wisdom holds you back from your own adventure?
Hmm.
How could embracing just a little bit of that screw it, let's do it attitude, maybe in a small way at first, change how you tackle your next challenge, whether that's a project, a personal ambition, maybe a career move? His story really suggests that the most rewarding path, the most fulfilling one, is often the one you carve out yourself, one bold step then another, reminding us maybe that life itself is the biggest venture we'll ever undertake.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.